Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Robin from the Saturday morning Big Book Study in Doylestown, PA.
My name's Robin. I am a window crawling through alcohol. I got that from Lawrence from Torrance. I stole that from him. This is probably, the hardest thing that I could ever do. Is to stand in front of you guys. But fear doesn't control my life anymore today. So I'm facing my fears. I tried to say no to Pete when he asked me once. And it was a legitimate excuse, and then he asked again. So hopefully God will be speaking through me tonight. I'm just warning you, I'm a loose cannon, so I have no idea what I'm going to say or where I'm going to start. Other than, sometimes my mind gets wiped out, because my nerves are standing in front of people. So excuse me if that happens. I really don't know where to start. I guess I'll start where I wasn't going to start from. I'm really nervous. I can't believe it. I usually don't start from when I was little, but I guess I will, I was one of four and came from a very dysfunctional family. There wasn't a lot of anything taught is what I know today. Of being right or emotionally well. There was a lot of harshness. wasn't a lot of love shown. So I know that doesn't make me an alcoholic, but it definitely, my step work meant a lot for that. At any rate, my mom was an addict, and she was in and out of hospitals a lot. Psychiatric hospitals. Back then, we didn't have a lot of rehabs like they have today. So a lot of different things that I seen when I was little that I didn't understand, I had a house full of people trying to kill themselves all the time, so that was very confusing to me. But now I know to be, addiction. She was spiritually sick. At any rate, so when I was little, I was fostered out a lot because of her addiction and my dad. I guess women, wine, and song. He was about women, wine, and song. Like I said, there wasn't a lot of love shown from the guy. So he would drop me off of places because he didn't want to take care of me. A couple times, I remember one time being dropped off. I was 6 years old, and he didn't come back for a year. And I just remember, the abandonment issues that I dealt with through my step work. And the loneliness that I dealt with through my step work, which, I've been able to forgive them. When I came into the program, though, I absolutely hated myself. I hated everybody in my family. And I hated all you guys. I definitely did not want to come here. It was the last place. I absolutely love and adore AA today. But when I first came, I was kicking and screaming. When I came in, January 10th is my sobriety date of 7 years. When I came in this time, actually the first time I came to AA, I was 18 years old. I was a full-blown alcoholic at the time. I was able to stay sober for 2 months. I did what I thought I was supposed to do, I made coffee and I went to a meeting every day. And I had no idea the correlation between alcoholism and, my mind and the dysfunction, the chaos that I was living in. I just thought, I came from a dysfunctional family. I was raised by wolves, and what's to be expected? I didn't have good role models. So I really didn't correlate the two. At that time, I really wasn't given any information. whether it be my ignorance, maybe I wasn't ready or maybe it wasn't being said, I'm not really sure, but that's my experience. I did at the time, you know, get a sponsor that I didn't use. And at any rate, I had a, from that point on, there was 26 years of going in and out and really never being well informed about you know, literature and what my real problem was. I would come in for very small intervals, and I would do the same thing. I would hold on to my chair and just hope that that I would stay sober. You know, I would carpool with people, go to speaker meetings, and did what I thought everybody was telling me to do. Made a meeting every day, and there's something that would happen inside of my head. Once I got the thought in my head and it was locked and loaded in there, I was going. There was no calling any sponsor or, you know, hitting a meeting. I was on another run. And this went for 26 more years. I led a meaningless, purposeless life. At the time when I was 18, I was couch surfing. I was pretty much homeless other than, you know, couch surfing. You know, I wasn't in the gutter. I slept in a lot of basements. Pissy mattresses were no problem, you know. I didn't mind that at all. I tried the Geographical Cure at that time, and between that time, I went all over the country. You know, I made it to California, and I remember one time I was in the hills of Hollywood. You know, I thought I had made it. I thought I had arrived. And if anybody remembers Herbie the Love Bug, what was the guy's name? He had the round ball peen hammerhead. What was his name? Buddy Hackett, yeah. And so I went to this party, and I'll just tell you this story. I went to this party in the hills of Hollywood. It was a Halloween party. I made it to California. I went to California. I was trying a geographical change, and I remember I had a little bit of money. I saved a little bit of money. At that time, at 18, 19, I wasn't able to hold jobs. I went through 100 jobs, and I had been on my own for a long time. My mother like threw me out like 15, 16 years old, so I'd been on my own for a while. And I remember I had a little bit of money, and I took my TV. I'd saved enough money to buy a car, believe it or not, and went across the country. So I go to this party in the hills of Hollywood, and Buddy Hackett's daughter was the owner of one of the place there. Lisa Hackett, her name was, and she looked exactly like her father. She had the same head and everything. But she had a really nice body, though, a real nice body. And she was with Vince Van Patten, you know. And I remember them saying, don't drink the Blue Nun. You know, the Blue Nun was this wine, this cheap wine, or maybe it was expensive, I don't know. Because at that time, I was more of a whiskey and a beer drinker. And I remember, like, you know, like, all the beer was gone, you know. I was, like, 19 years old, 20 years old. And so, of course, I went for the Blue Nun, and I got thrown out of the party. But, I like telling that story because it reminds me of from the hills of Hollywood to the pissy mattresses in Trenton. I just preferred the pissy mattresses in Trenton, you know. But, you know, so I remember, like, coming to AA, and they said, you know, do you have any blackouts? And I was like, I don't think so. And, you know, that's when, you know, you can't remember anything. And I'm like, oh, yeah, all the time, you know. That's happening to me all the time. You might be an alcoholic, you know. And I kept thinking, like, you know, see, my thinking would come in throughout that time, and I'd be like, nah, there's no way. Because, you know, I'd come in with judgment. And if you look too good at the podium, first of all, you didn't look the way I felt on the inside, so I was shutting down right away. And boy, I just my God, it wipes me out up here. You know, I heard this psychologist say, I listen to a lot of tapes and constantly listen to spiritual stuff and AA tapes and you know, for the transformation of the mind. And I heard this psychologist saying that if you have post trauma stress syndrome, which I do, from some things that happened in my life, you get wiped out when you're in front of people. If it's already, you know, something that you hate, you'll get wiped out, your mind, you know. I like that a lot better than, you know, my sponsor telling me that it was self-centered fear, you know. And I'm like, well, I've been praying for this for 6.5 years, you know. It hasn't gone away yet, you know. But, so, yeah, I definitely like that because I am not addicted to what people think of me today, you know. And I was in bondage with that for a long time. I remember coming around this time to AA and applying myself to the work, that was like, oh, man, the first thing that I was free of, you know, was what you thought didn't matter anymore, you know? It was like, I was just worried about what God thought, you know, and pleasing Him. So when I came around this time, I was, the one thing I remember, though, coming around all those years for a little bit here and there, I remember everybody saying, I don't really hear it being said much anymore. You're going to lose your mind. You know, your mind's going to go. And, you know, I thought, well, it's going to have to, because that's the love that I have for alcohol. I remember when I put alcohol in my body, that exact feeling that my mentor disclosed to me when they were taking me through the book and, you know, the big book studies of that elusive, that feeling like all my troubles and worries were over. Oh, my God. And not only that, but, like, now I could look at you. I could look you in the eye. I could speak to you. And I liked you, you know. And people looked funnier. All those things that make me an alcoholic, you know, the 10% they say that we are. So my perception of things changed drastically. And getting that information this time around, when somebody sat me down, was so freeing to me that I knew I was doomed. So that's what makes me an alcoholic, because once I put it in my body, yeah, I can't say that where it's going to lead me, if I'm going to have a blackout, if I'm not. I had blackouts for a while. Then there was times that I switched alcohol, different types of alcohol, and then I didn't have blackouts. You know, time I drank gin, and then the white stuff's no good. Let's go to the brown stuff. The brown stuff made me crazy. I was usually pretty happy drunk, though. So I thought, you know, and I wasn't drinking out of a brown bag. But towards the end, and I tried the geographical. When I was about 18 years old and I stopped for a little bit, I thought, you know what my problem is? I'm way too young. I just have to have money. I need some money. So I transformed the monster into, you know, workaholism. But, you know, I stopped doing a few bad things that I was doing, you know. And I was doing a lot of bad things. I was a rotten, no good kid, you know, house robber, car thief, you know, it was horrible, you know, what I was as a child. But those were survival skills that I had picked up. But you wouldn't know it, you know. I always, like, I cleaned up very well, and I was quiet and polite, so I didn't look like a thief. But I wouldn't steal from my friends, though, you know, so that was okay. But at any rate, so I became like a workaholic and just an alcoholic. And so I was able to put some other things down, you know. And that's how I was able to get all that time. And also I thought it would be good if I could give a child, like, the way that I had so much love inside of me. And I hadn't been loved, never really, you know, held or anything like that. Love wasn't a word that went around. It was an embarrassment, you know, to show any kind of love or any kind of jovial. They didn't laugh much in my house. But anyway, I laugh a lot today, so that's good. But so I thought having a child would be a good thing, because then I could give all this love to this child, you know. And I drug that poor kid through life, you know. And I remember, like, being at the – and I just wanted to work, because now I didn't want to, like, even be a parent. It was just restless and irritable and discontent is what I would feel. Because if I was with her most of the time, I wasn't completely obliterated, you know, and that was the problem. And I remember just thinking, like, what is wrong with me? You know, I'm just a piece of trash, like, before I, you know, had the truth in the book. I just thought, man, I keep choosing. They're telling me that I'm choosing to pick up this drink, you know, and it doesn't feel that way, because, like, I'm really, like, you know, trying not to, and then, you know, like, my car would just go to the bar. And I remember, like, going to the Keys, like, 10, 15 years before I got here, and them, like, beating me down, saying, you know, you're a piece of trash, and you're choosing to drink more than you're choosing to stay sober. I'm like, oh, I am? Oh, my God, it just doesn't even seem that way, you know? And I just thought I was a low life, you know, and that there was no hope for me. So because of that, being misinformed most of the time, I would just lay in my house towards the end, and drink and drink and drink. You know, throughout the years, And being a workaholic, I became an entrepreneur, you know. It was almost like The Secret. Like, I remember this girl in recovery always trying to give me that Secret movie, and I just watched it recently. I'm like, oh, my God, I did that my whole life. Like, when I was running the streets of Florida, and I just gave birth to my daughter, I had enough love to change my situation and try and be a better mother the best that I could, you know. And that's where the workaholism came in, but... While I did that, I was never there for her. I was never present, you know, either by being hungover or just working or being restless, irritable, and discontent when she was around, you know, like swinging on the swings. Like, when is this going to get over so I can leave, you know, and go party, you know? And that's the cold truth, you know? And I raised her with instilling fear because I was a single parent and I didn't know any other way. And that's the way that I was raised. There was a lot of anger. And it's been a long amends, you know, an unconditional love to repair that. But it's really come around, you know, in 6.5 years. We have an amazing, loving relationship. And with my neurotic behaviors, you know, pawning them off on her, I'm surprised that it's so good this soon, you know. But it's just applying the principles, you know, in all my affairs. And that's why I've received those results. I know that I'm bouncing around, but it's the best I can do with my brain, the way that it is. And that's, it's like towards the end, my brain was wiped out, you know. They had told me I was going to die like 15 years ago or something from the liver, so the liver was failing. And they gave me 5 years, so the 5-year mark was up. And I was dying, you know. And I had conditioned my daughter, you know, I'd said it's quantity. What is it? Quality, not quantity? Quality, not quantity, right? Yeah, it's quality, not quantity, you know? Like, this is what mommy does, you know what I mean? Like, it's okay. Like, I'm choosing my own death. Like, I had her conditioned for that. I'm going to go out with the liver, but don't worry about it. I'm going to leave you some money, you know? And I remember, like, doing these, like, somewhat bad deeds and being a workaholic thinking, you know, God, I'm sorry for being, you know, this bad person, but, you know, I'm going to take the wrath, but I want my daughter, you know, to have a good life, not knowing that, you know, Scripture now tells you that, oh, no, they pay for what you do, right, if you refer to Scripture. So I'll get back to my recovery here. So, so when I came in, so the liver was failing, and it was 10 years ago. I actually did a holistic remedy. Max Gerson was the doctor. They wanted to give me chemo for my liver and all that. I had the ascites in the belly, and I was out of my mind. I remember tasting the ammonia in the back of my throat. Like, that's amazing. The holistic doctor was telling me from California, could you please go to the emergency room? I'm like, no, that's not an option, you know. Like, you know, watching my mother, you know, 25 years ago and being mutilated by these, you know, nothing against doctors and nurses. I'm not saying, this is just my story. So don't take that personal. Anybody in the medical field, there's a lot of great, you know, medical doctors and stuff. I'm just saying. She went through 25 operations and she got addicted to Percs and then they put her on methadone. You know, she wasn't even an intravenous user and they put her on methadone. So she became just like, you know, an intravenous user. So I was afraid of the doctor. So I chose the holistic methods, and I was able to come out of this death state that I was in. It's great, miraculous. 10 years, here I am to talk about it. So at any rate, that wasn't like, so what? So I'm dying from the liver, you know, like tell an alcoholic that. Do you have anything better? Like, that's cool, you know. Like, that's not going to stop us, you know. And but what really got me was, you know, they said, you're going to lose your mind, you know. But at any rate, in this time, I was able to be a really pretty good hustler, but in a legal way. I was an entrepreneur. And I ran all over the country, you know. Like, I was in the vending business. I was hustling. That was really good, amazing business. I was, you name it, I did it. I mean, you know, from having, you know, girls hustle roses for me, not me, them, right? Hustling roses for me to, you know, the car business, at any rate, and also being a bartender in that for 18 years as well. So I was able to establish some things, you know, which I thought was going to heal me, you know, if I the man with the most gold rules, you know, and I know that's not to be true today, you know. And the only difference between me and someone who doesn't have it is they don't know it, you know. I know it, that God, you know, has all the answers for me. The only difference was I had a Mercedes in the driveway when I wanted to die rather than the backpack that I had when I was 18, you know. And so now it was just like I just didn't want to live, you know. The pain of being in my brain was just so bad. The prison in my mind, you know, like I couldn't stop the racy, you know, the thoughts, the fear of everything, like, was just overwhelming. And now I'm in business and I have all these properties and I can't make the appointments. I'm stopping in the middle of sentences. It's worse than tonight. I'm stopping in the middle of sentences, changing the subject, and with the grace of God, like talking to this builder, you know, with the grace of God, 3 o'clock in the morning, I would wake up with my racy mind to drink, and I would remember that I did that towards the end. You know, that's the grace of God, knowing that I was insane, you know. Like, I can't even believe that, you know. Yeah, the grace of God. But, so I had all these properties, man, and my God, I owed the IRS $93,000, and like instead of buying purses, I was buying properties, like in this mad state of mind, like, you know, not what the heck? They weren't expensive properties, though. They were little Trenton properties, like $20,000 properties, you know. And I remember being sober 2 years, and my sponsor said to me, I bought 2 houses in one day because I was still nuts, you know, still chaotic, and 3 in 1 week. And he said to me, Vance, he said, don't you think you should have ran that by me? I said, I didn't know you were in real estate. And I was serious. I was serious. Like, yeah. So it took a while, but I'll tell you, when I came in AA this time, I had about a week sober. And I got the 1-2-3 punch, I always say, because I ran into this guy, Bobby Bellerby. And I know he wouldn't be angry for me, you know, you tell he breaks his own anonymity. And I went up to him and I heard him, and like there was this power coming from him, you know, and I ran over to him and I was like, please, please tell me, you know, how do you stay sober? You know, I'm 26 years, I can't, you know, what am I doing wrong? He said, kid, I'm telling you, he said, get to that big book study on Monday night. Chris Brennan. He said, you're gonna die, you know, like, you better get there, girl, you know. Don't listen to anybody else, just get there. I ran there, and, like, Chris took off for 3 weeks. I had to wait, like, 3 more weeks. I'm like, oh, no. But anyway, when I went to that big book study, I heard things that I had never heard before, you know. I heard the truth, and it resonated with my spirit, you know. And, like, since I was a little kid, I guess, in going through the stuff that I had gone through, I always had a real strong intuition, you know. But I didn't know it until I got sober, because I didn't even know what that really what you were talking about when you said that, other than Jiminy Cricket would say, you know, let your conscience be your guide. But I had ignored that for so long, that voice was gone, that conscience, you know. And I didn't know. I was very confused. I remember hearing, like, one of the promises, like, you will intuitively know what used to baffle you, and I was like, oh, my God, I want that, you know. And the promises kept me going. But Chris told me the truth. And the funny thing is I had a sponsor that told me not to go there. She said, do not go. I had this woman sponsor. I was willing to do anything when I came in, all in any length. I was broken that much. I was run down, and my brain was going on too little, you know, I don't know what, not very much. And she said, I suggest that you do not go to that meeting. I'm like, what? That's the only thing that's made me feel good. Yeah, well, I'm going, you know. And, you know, thank God that I didn't listen to her. And then I went. And I just continued to go. And thank God there was this kid in the 12 Keys, Scott Fleming. I got to say, he hates when I say that, but, you know, I don't always say it. It's probably the first time I said it, Scott Fleming. And this man was my angel. So that's the 1-2-3 punch that I'm talking about. I had Bellerby, Chris Brennan, and Scott Fleming. And I had about a month sober, and seen the light coming from this man. This is the only time that he said this, too. And I always thought the men with the men, women with the women, you know. I tried to be the best that I could be. And he was, the light was coming from him, was beaming from his eyes, and he was talking about this power, you know, that's inside of you. Like, what are you talking talking about? I never heard that before. And he said, and plus, on top of it, you'll be able to stop drinking, you know, if you tap into his power. And he said, and I'll show anybody, I'll tell anybody, man or woman. I was like, woman? Oh, okay. So I ran after, and at the end of the meeting, I was like, can you show that to me, please? He goes, do you have an hour and a half? I said, yeah, right now, you know. And he sat down. When he showed me the part, the mental part, I'm surprised that I could even get it because my brain was so burned out. It really was. Like, I definitely had beginning stages of wet brain. And when he showed me the mental part of this disease and that I really didn't have a choice, you know, if I was a chronic alcoholic, man, I said, oh, my God, how am I going to get this psychic changed? I didn't know that he could continue to take me through steps. So he took me through 1, 2, and 3, and I was still foggy from what, if I could, you know, just remember what he said, you know. And then I started going to the big book studies, and I don't know where Chris was. He might have been in To the Wives or something, you know what I mean? So this lady, I was, like, forcing her to take me through the steps. So she wanted me to wait and everything. I'm like, look, lady, this is the only thing that I didn't do, you know. I'm like, I got to have this psychic change, you know. And at that time, I didn't realize that if I went through the steps, I would get it. I guess I didn't get that part when he was telling me. So I ran around Philly looking for a psychic change. I swear to God, like, I'm running around going, please, I got the psychic change. Please, please. I swear there was this one girl at the 12 Keys that she didn't like me because I was running around trying to get a psychic change all nuts. And, like, you know, when you're, like, just, like, you know, like a raw nerve, and, you know, in the beginning, I would have to get up 5 times, you know, because I had, severe nervous breakdowns and everything. Like, I couldn't sit still for a whole hour. And I think maybe she was judging me for that. And she's yelling at me. I remember Melita, I'm friends with her today. We laugh about it. She's yelling at me, like, why don't you just sit down, girl? You know, like, the psychic change is right in you. Where are you looking for it? I'm like, what are you talking about? But, like, the sponsor, oh, my goodness. She was such an angel. Like, I love this lady, you know? Like, she told me things that I know are in the formula, you know, that are in our big book, which is, she would say, but she just wasn't taking me through the book the way it was written, the way I wanted to go, you know. Like, that, I'm so glad that one thing stuck in my head, you know. And she would say things like, and I was so angry, like, I was unapproachable. Women did not come near me. I was like, my hair was all wild and everything, and I was glad that they didn't because, you know, just whatever, you know, just, like, stay away. I was angry. But she said, Robin, everything has to turn into love. All your hate, you have to turn into love. And I'm like, oh, how do I do that? But she didn't give me the directions, how, you know? And so I ran around, you know, chasing and making her. I remember the one day I'm like, we're doing a third step prayer right now. You know, I'm like, even though Scott went over 1, 2, and 3 with me, we didn't do the formal thing. And I would go to the big book studies and he'd be like, yeah, formally on your knees. I'm like, I'm going to get her, telling her how to sponsor me. Like, she didn't like that. And I'm like, we got to do it right now. And I jump on my knees, you know, and I, okay, you know, and she's like, all right. And so this is what she did. I can't believe it, but I said, please help me write this 4-step because even though I was, like, educated, even though I didn't go to school because my mother used to keep me home from school, I had a pretty keen mind. I was a good reader and stuff. But you wouldn't know it when I came in because a couple years I couldn't comprehend one sentence because of the wet brain and all. And I just couldn't read, but I can read, you know. And it's come back, you know. It's all come back. I can comprehend pretty well now. So she, I told her I did not understand the sports stuff, you know. And I wasn't really familiar with Joe and Charlie tapes quite yet. And something about their voice, it was like so mundane or something. I just couldn't hear it, you know. I needed somebody to sit and show me. In the book. But she called me and I said, please show me how to write this 4-step. Because, Chris, I would go to these big book studies. And I always ask him not to do this now because I was one of the sufferers. Excuse me. Right when we get to the 4th step, he would say. He wouldn't tell you how to do it, he would say. So I hope you have a good sponsor that's been through the steps and knows how to take you through it. What the heck, man? I've been cutting, like, you know, like, and you're not going to tell me how? And I was, like, just too burnt out to ask. So I trusted that she knew how, you know. And so she sits me down. She said, I wrote down about my mother and father. And actually just writing my mother and father was very healing, the upheavals that came up and everything. And, you know, a little bit of this and that. And it was like, you know, what's that you do with the priest when you confessional. It was like a confessional. And I felt terrible afterwards. I'm like, wait, you didn't show me how to write the fourth step. And what happened was I said, could you show me how to write the fourth step? She goes, we're just going to do the fifth step. I'm like, but I didn't write the fourth, you know. So it was like a confessional. I felt terrible. I knew something was wrong. And I kept going to the studies. And, you know, then Chris would say things like, if your sponsor didn't show you where the prayers are, chances are they didn't know what they were doing. You know, and he would say things like that. So I went and found a man. I actually looked for a long time for a woman. At that time, there wasn't a lot of women. Now there's like hundreds, it seems like, you know, just in the last 6 years. But I went and found a man to take me through the steps. And this man was an amazing man. You know, the one thing that I had developed was, obviously, you know, they say love thy neighbor as you love thyself. And I hated myself, so I was very judgmental, very prejudiced. And this was a black man, you know. And when they said, and I really wanted to be thorough and honest, so I had to sit down with this black man and tell him I was prejudiced, you know. And he loved me. Like, there was no judgment, like, when I told him. And the funny thing is, the lady was Jewish, you know, and I'm not prejudiced, like, I mean, not even hair. It's just amazing, like, how that's all transformed. And that day when I did that fifth step, it fell for me. I'm telling you, that fell for me. That ignorance, you know, that I had, you know, about people that I didn't even know, you know. It was like my mother, like, grew up somewhat in Amsterdam, so she always told me, don't judge the prostitutes, you know. She didn't tell me about, you know, people of color, you know. Like, so stupid. But she would always say, don't judge the prostitutes. Be nice to the prostitutes. So I'm always nice to the prostitutes. I am, really. I was the other day. I was like, I went up to these two prostitutes. I was like, hey, ladies, you know. I was like, you know, hey, if you need any help. I was, you know, telling them all about my life and everything. Here's my number, you know. I'm like, yeah, they should do it the old way that they used to do it, you know. Go under the bridges. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so this guy changed my life, man. And he loved me like a father, you know. The father that I never had. And it was just an amazing experience. It was an amazing experience. The funny thing that happened, though, God has a really funny sense of humor. All these black girls started asking me to sponsor them, you know. And so I had about a year and a half sober, right? And I'm caravanning a bunch of black girls. And this guy comes up to me and he said, Robin, you know, I always wanted to ask you out. He said, but I understand you only date black men, you know. And I said, well, why would you say that? He goes, because you're always driving around with a carload full of black people. I'm like, oh. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, God has a funny sense of humor, you know. And I've had the fortune of, you know, just all diversity of people that I have sponsored. It's been amazing. I've had the pleasure of sponsoring transvestites, you know, and, you know, people that other people would judge, you know, and just totally being non-judgmental. And the one thing that the lady sponsored, like, I always kept her, though, even though I still had Vance, you know, and I would always... She would, like, get really upset, she said, if I let her go as a sponsor, so. And, you know, I know what it was like to be abandoned, so. I said, I'm not abandoning anyone, man. You know what I mean? Like, she's not abandoning me. I'm not going to abandon her. And she would tell me wonderful things. Of course, she didn't, you know, take me to the big book, but she would say a lot of loving things and, you know, remind me when she was available. She wasn't available a lot, but that I had to turn all my hate into love. And I practiced that. And how I was able to do that was through the 12 steps, you know, and taking other girls through the 12 steps. And amazing things started happening. I just, you know, would forget all of my problems. And a lot of times at that time, like at the end of my, I hate saying addiction, but alcohol addiction, my alcoholism, I was... I got involved with this terrible guy, you know. It was like I was so lonely and I was so empty inside that towards the end, I was like, my sister that I was real close to and sometimes would get placed with, like, committed suicide, you know. It was my biggest fear my whole life. And she had been trying to kill herself since we were little. And she was my baby, you know. She was 2 years older than me. And, you know, there's a time, like, she slit her wrist in front of me. I know that sounds like really, you know. But I can actually say it, like, tell, like, a story today because it doesn't affect me like that. But I loved her, so, you know. I loved her so much. And anyway, when she took her own life, she actually was sober for quite a few years, and I saw AA through her, the change in her, you know. And she was a real bad heroin addict at the age of 14, full blown. And the bottles, that she, you know, the Mad Dog 2020, like at 15 years old, she would hide them all over the house. But she was like, and I would always compare myself to her, like, well, I'm not that bad. I'm not like my sister, you know. And plus, I just thought I came from a bunch of nuts. They just wanted to die. You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, I'm insane, but I'm not an alcoholic. It was easier to admit that, you know, that I was crazy, but that I wasn't an alcoholic. That was a tough thing to admit, you know, until I actually saw it in the book. Then I realized, yeah, that I was one of you guys. So I know I just lost my train of thought again. Okay. But, yeah, I was going to tell you with something with my sister. See, that's why I don't go there, because that really sometimes wipes me out. So I was like really like, oh man, I was broken and lonely, and I was actually able to put a couple months together, and then when she killed herself, I didn't have any formula, you know, together to any real footing in recovery. So I went out again, and what happened was, like, I thought, you know, I could just come back, you know, no problem, and I didn't have a desire to come back for 8 years. It was torture. And so, of course, I was alone. Most of the time, most of my life, I was alone. So I thought, you know what? Anybody that wants to date me, anybody at all that wants to date this nutcase, I'm going to go out with, you know, and don't ever do that, you know, because I'm thinking like I'm filling that void. And this guy was, it was terrible. So he ran around, like, robbing me and, you know, setting me up. I'm like, oh, my God, you know, like, if I would try and break up with him, he'd, you know, like, threaten to call the police. I'm like, have some dignity, dude, you know what I mean? Like, get a life. And he would, and I was able to make money. So, yeah, he actually robbed me for like $230,000, but which means nothing to me today. I don't put any attachment to that money. But at the time that I was going through it, you know, it seemed like a lot, and I actually was able to stay sober through all that and being brain dead and stuff. And he was actually going around trying to put workmen's liens. He would show up on my properties and, you know, throw contractors off the job and try and put workmen's liens on my properties to rob me. And you know, I changed my perception on things. I actually looked at it as though he saved me. He was able to save me by doing that. You know what I mean? By me allowing that. And that's what the stuff, you know, with God, how he transformed my mind. I was able to just change my perception on everything. I have the same life. I just changed my perception of it. Well, not exactly the same life. But, like, towards the end, so I had this guy that was, like, strong-arming me and blackmailing me, you know. And in the beginning of my recovery, I remember telling my sponsor, please help me, this guy, like, he's... And I was just, like, so weak and so broken, you know, that I couldn't stop him from doing all this mad stuff. And he would, like, put these fake charges on me and stuff, you know, if I didn't let him rob me and stuff. And it's crazy. And I remember telling my sponsor, please just help me. How do I get rid of this guy, please? Every day. I'll pray. And about 3 months into it, you know, and she kept saying, no major changes for a year. You know, no major changes for a year. This guy's going to kill me, man. And my friend Scott, I remember him coming to my house. I only had a couple months sober. And I didn't talk much because I really couldn't. The brain wasn't functioning well. I would just, like, go along and listen. And he said, I told him a little bit about this guy. Like, I don't want this guy here, you know. Anyway, when he came to my house, he said, Rob, what's he doing here, you know? Why is he here? I said, my sponsor said I was too fragile. He really wanted to. He goes, you're too fragile not to. And I was like, oh, my God. So I got rid of him right away. And, of course, there was a lot of court battles, a lot of attorney fees, you know, that he put on me. But the whole time, like, I knew that God was going to restore me to sanity. I don't know. Early on, Like, even though I was a skeptic with the whole God thing, I kind of was, but I kind of wasn't. Like, I knew of a God that, you know, the religious hypocrites that I grew up with were telling me of, you know. And I just wasn't really sure, because that God was, like, really mean and, you know, cruel and stuff. But, like, you know, Scott would keep telling me, Robin, it doesn't matter what you believe, if you believe, if you don't believe. If you have the willing to believe, just make a decision to continue on, and we guarantee you an experience, that you will have an experience with God. You'll have your own experience. It won't be your mother's, father's. You know, you'll have your own experience with God. I'm like, you're guaranteeing me that I'll have a psychic change? I'm like, why didn't you tell me that before? You're guaranteeing I'm going to get the psychic change? You promised, you know? And I believed his promises, you know. He said, I guarantee you that if you do it the way that it's written, that you will have a psychic change. You will have a spiritual experience. And I can tell you that I've received every one of those promises, you know, that I do not wish, I do not regret the past, nor do I wish to shut the door on it. And that was one of the last ones that I had received, you know. And I was telling Amber on the way here that, you know, one of the last things that I'd received was the unbelievable love that I have for myself, you know. And when I came in, like, I couldn't look you in the eye. I couldn't lift my head. I hated myself. I had that dysmorph thing, you know, with the mind thinking that I was ugly and that I was just ugly. That I was very ugly. And I would sabotage any good relationship, because what would you want to do with me? You know, once you got to know me, you wouldn't like me. All those things. If you were a good-looking guy, there was no way I was coming towards you, because you were too good for me. So, at any rate, yeah. So I had settled for that guy. I guess that's where I got off on that. I had settled for this crazy guy trying to fit that hole in my soul, you know, that God's filled in me today. And I've sponsored a lot of women. I never, you know, the other day I was like trying to count. Like, I don't count, you know, because I just do this because I know that God's using me as an instrument. I've had a lot of spiritual awakening. If I told you how much God speaks to me, you'd think I was crazy. You know? I had somebody the other day call me a kook, somebody who's close to me. When I told him my spiritual experience, he called me a kook. And I smiled, you know? And I said, I thought they were a kook 5 minutes before it happened to me, too, you know? That's okay. Like, I love you anyway, you know what I mean? And the funny thing is, the next day, there's these two numbers that I always told him. Like, God gives me confirmation that I'm doing everything in His divine order. And the next day, we were out, and we were helping these people that broke down with their vehicle, and both of those numbers came up. The one number came up, and he looked at me, and he said, is God happy if I'm helping? Like a proud peacock, you know. Is this, you know, am I getting points for God? I'm like, absolutely. You're helping these people? Yes. God loves that, you know? And then the funny thing is we drove away and we had to come back for the people's numbers, and the license plate was the other number. I was like, you think I'm a kook now, you know? And I was like, ha, God speak to me. But I'll tell you about this one God story real quick. It was I was running around, and God had been speaking to me the whole time. He just kept laying out this path of, like, look, Robin, look, you know, like, I'm showing you this, I'm showing you this. He would drop all kinds of signs. Like, I've had a lot of signs. I don't know why I'm so graced with signs, you know, but I do. But then again, I prayed for signs my whole life. So they say if you pray for something long enough, you're going to receive it, you know. And so one of the things was, I was praying for God to put a woman in my life in the program, because he said women with the women, men with the men. It was, I don't know, probably 15 years ago or something. And so I was like, please, God, you got to put a woman in my life, because I'm not going to make it. That's what they keep telling me. I need a woman. I can't be hanging around with these guys, you know. And so 5 minutes later, I go to Nifty 50s, and there's this girl working there. And she comes up to me, and she says, is your name Robin? Are you from Trenton? And I was like, yeah, who are you? She said, I'm the homeless girl that you took off the street down in Fort Lauderdale. I was 21 years old. Me and my two kids that you put up in your house. Whoa, hi, how have you been? That's wonderful. And she's like, and I'm in recovery. And I was like, so that was the fastest God story. When I was praying, God, you know, put this girl in my path. I was like, wow, you know, she's awesome too. I still keep in touch with her. We tell that story every once in a while. I think she was more addicted to her boyfriend, actually, than anything else. But she was living in the car with two children, you know, and I was able to take her in my house. Fearless, you know, that I was to help people. Yeah, and you know, all the women that I've sponsored, and there's been a lot. There's not many that I had the fortune of taking, of listening to their footsteps with, because they just never made it that far, you know. And I know I stayed sober though, and you know, I just keep doing the work. But you know, if it wasn't for Chris constantly beating that into my head, like, because I had a little bit of an experience when I was at step, when I did my fifth step with Vance, and this girl asked me, "Can you sponsor me?" I'm like, "Oh no, I'm only on, I just did step five, you know." Okay, but like, I'll take you up until that point. And just like Chris said, you know, it put fire underneath me to learn the rest, you know. I'm like, because I would do it for her, but not for me, you know. I'm like, I got to do six and seven. And I thought, there's got to be more. There's something, you know, maybe I'm not teaching this right. I'm not getting something. And I remember Father Tom. I had the fortune of doing a fifth step with Father Tom, if any of you guys remember him. He used to do big book studies where he correlated the big book and the 12 and 12. And I used to show up there every Saturday, like, by myself. I remember seeing Ricky D there all the time. Like, he doesn't even remember me, Ricky D, like, from back then, you know. I'm like, Rick, we were just so brain dead, you know. Like, I remember every Saturday I was there by myself, like, faithfully. I would always try and get people. Like, I was like, I don't know what to tell you, but you just got to come with me, you know. And I would always, like, bring them to the studies, like, trying to, you know, get through to them sideways, you know. You know, Scott was the only one that ever told me about this power that I had inside of myself, and that I could tap into it through the steps, you know. And that nobody would have power over me anymore. Like, I'd give power to the men and the money and the jet skis and all that, you know. That would all change. And I'm just so grateful for him, too, because a lot of times when I wasn't quite getting this formula, because it took me a while, and I really tried so hard, but the brain, it took a while for the brain to come, too. Every time I had a little bit of a problem, and I would tell him, like, about these houses, what am I going to do? You know, I can't deal with it. I'm going to go to jail. He would always say, more reliance upon God, Ron. More reliance upon God. That's all he would ever say to me. I'm going to go to jail, the IRS, more reliance upon God. I'm like, what does that mean? How do I get it? But, you know, going to the big book studies and eventually taking the girls through steps, I do know how to get it and what cuts me off, you know. And the one thing, yeah, that the lady used to tell me from early on was the judgment thing. Like, stop. You got to pray for the judgment to be released from your head, Rob. And so early on, I started doing that. And with that, I got great peace, you know, when I stopped judging others and, you know, loving them unconditional. I definitely got great peace from that. And then I worked on the tongue, you know, like, not reacting when I wanted to. Even, you know, in a home group setting, when somebody's attacking you, I didn't have good communication skills. I worked on that for years, not reacting, by asking God, you know, to help me. And he did. And one day, that stuff just stopped, you know. And then, you know, days later, I'd be able to gracefully tell this lady something that she could hear loudly, because I'm saying it very soft, rather than... Whenever I was, you know, saying something loud and out of anger, I would shut down the people's hearing. And then I would always look like the bad guy, you know, even when I was the victim. If I came off with anger, all bets were off, even in the courtroom. I found that out the hard way, you know. The funny thing is, all those battles and this guy, like, taking me to court, and he was trying to, you know, take my money and everything, that guy towards the end, I won through all of it. Like, it was true, you know. They kept telling me, like, just rely upon God, you know. Rely on for the outcome to be on God. And I did. And all those doors that God opened for freedom, he shut. He closed the doors that were going to lock me up in chains as he was opening them. And I just kept helping others. He was changing my life, like, behind me. I wasn't thinking about my life. And that's exactly exactly how it happened for me. And that's really all I have.